Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hey, what are you up to?
Oh, hi. I'm listening to this awesome podcast.
Ooh, I love finding awesome new podcasts. What is it about?
Well, it's about a bunch of things. Sometimes history, sometimes hauntings, sometimes it's spooky, and sometimes it's funny, but it's always interesting.
Ooh, okay, that sounds great. What's special about it?
Well, each week, Celine picks a topic and reads it, and Matt creates a pairing of a treat and a drink to go with this peculiar tale.
And they talk
about it, and they joke about it.
Hold on.
And sometimes they have guests and have even more fun.
Wait a second.
What?
That's our podcast.
Yeah, you're right.
Why are you listening to our podcast?
Well, you know, we're heading into the long dark of winter, and that can make some people feel kind of isolated, and listening to Peculiar Pairings is a great way to feel like you're hanging out with good friends at the push of a button.
Well, that actually sounds really nice. Kind of sounds like everyone should be listening to Peculiar Pairings.
You know, I couldn't agree more.
So if this sounds like it's piqued your interest, you should search Peculiar Pairings podcast on your favorite podcasting platform today.
Yeah, we're everywhere. Come check it out.
Find us. We're there.
In a world filled with mysteries, where the unknown lurks in the shadows, two intrepid hosts dare to uncover the truth. Join Glenn and Oma on a journey into the realm of caffeinated conspiracies, now a part of the Pod Moth Network.
Hey, I'm Glenn.
And I'm Oma.
Together, we explore the unexplained, from ancient legends to modern-day enigmas.
Join us as we delve into the depths of conspiracy theories, paranormal phenomena, and everything in between.
With a blend of curiosity, laughter, and a dash of caffeine, they'll take you on a wild ride through the mysteries of the universe.
So grab your favorite brew, sit back, and let's uncover the truth together.
Because truth, like coffee, is best served bold.
Caffeinated Conspiracies. Get ready to awaken your mind.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
What story do you have for us today, Mom?
I'm going to be telling you about a cold case that was over two decades cold, and it was the first use of familial DNA in a New York City case. And it led to a conviction. So it was a cold case, but it's solved now. Yay. No cliffhangers.
That's good.
Yeah. What are you going to be telling us about?
I am going to be talking about a real life final destination.
Yeah. Okay.
Very strange. But to go with it, I have the Courtside Punch cocktail, which is 2 ounces of Casa del Sol Blanco tequila, or any Blanco tequila you want, 2 ounces of fresh orange juice, 3 ounces of ginger beer, and garnish with an orange wedge. In a tall glass with ice, add tequila, orange juice, and ginger beer. Stir to combine and garnish with an orange wedge. Let's give it a try.
Not complicated. Okay. Nope. I think you'll like it more than me.
I need lime.
Lime? There's no lime in it. Is that what you said? Lime. It needs lime?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can't have tequila without lime. I mean, I know orange is a citrus, but it's too sweet. Doesn't complement the sweetness of the tequila well.
The ginger beer kind of covers the grossness of the tequila, but not enough for me to want to finish the drink.
I'd finish it, but I wouldn't order it again.
No, it's tequila, and I don't like tequila, and tequila is gross, and ugh.
I will say, I don't like tequila in most cocktails unless it's got lots of lime. Usually when I drink tequila, it's just a tequila shot or tequila and soda, but
yeah,
those both have lots of lime, so.
I only drink tequila when you make us drink tequila and I make you for the podcast. Yes.
Okay, well, let's see why this cocktail is connected to our story today.
Yeah.
So in the late 1970s, the University of Evansville, a small liberal arts school on the banks of the Ohio River, fielded a proud basketball program known as the Purple Aces. To the students and alumni of Evansville, team meant more than wins and losses. It was a community touchstone. Friday nights at the gym, local radio broadcast, and a steady source of small town pride all came from these basketball events. And the 1977 and 78 team were very promising that year, with a mix of upperclassmen leaders and promising youngsters, a coaching staff led by Bobby Watson, and a schedule that would test them against regional rivals. On the evening of December 13th, 1977, the team boarded a chartered Douglas DC-3, which is an airplane, operated by Air Indiana. They were taking a short flight from Evansville, Indiana to Nashville, Tennessee. The trip was routine, the kind of small charter that had been ferrying college teams around the regions for years. However, weather that night was poor. Fog and low visibility all across the area, but the flight was still cleared to take off, so that's what they did. At about 7:22 p.m. local time, the DC-3 began its takeoff, and eyewitnesses later described the aircraft struggling to climb. The airplane lifted earlier than it should have, and below the speed at which it was safe to take off and climb. The aircraft rolled and descended into a wooden ravine near the airport, impacting with catastrophic force and erupting in flames. All 29 people aboard, which consisted of 26 passengers and 3 crew members, were killed, and there were no survivors. It took hours for rescuers and local emergency crews to reach and work at the crash site. The wreckage was scattered and burned, and the community that night went from routine travel to unthinkable tragedy in the span of a heartbeat. On board were players, staff, supporters, and the flight crew. Among the dead were head coach Bobby Watson, members of the Purple Aces roster, athletic department personnel, and a few local supporters who had been invited for a ride-along.
Oh.
Okay. And there was, however, one player from that squad who did not board the flight. 18-year-old freshman David Furr had been injured, an ankle problem a few games before, which kept him from coming on the trip and effectively saved him from being on the airplane that night. For a brief moment, it looked like David had been spared an unspeakable fate. He came from a close family and had a bright future. His absence from the manifest felt like a small mercy in the immediate aftermath. The days after the crash, the National Transportation Safety Board launched a full investigation. The wreckage was examined, flight records scrutinized, and a careful timeline built from witnesses' statements and physical evidence. The final NTSB analysis was stark and technical, but its conclusion was devastatingly simple. The aircraft attempted takeoff with gusts locks still installed, on the right aileron, aileron, something like that.
Sure.
And rudder. The airplane's center of gravity had been shifted rearwards by excess baggage loaded onto the aircraft. Those two factors in combination made the airplane uncontrollable during the initial climb. What are gust locks? Gust locks, also called control locks, are devices that, when used in aircraft, is parked to prevent the wind from flapping control surfaces, like the things that make the back of the wing raise up and down. They're locks that prevent it from doing that when it's parked, basically.
Oh, okay.
Which you kind of need those for
flying. I didn't know they would need that. Yeah.
Me either. But apparently those were locked, which would not allow the plane to control itself. Basically.
Correct. Yes.
In layman's terms. Separately, baggage was loaded in a manner that placed too much weight towards the rear of the airplane, moving the center of gravity aft of safe limits. I don't know much about airplanes, but it sounds like weight distribution
unbalanced.
Is very important. So, yeah.
Yes.
So an aft center of gravity can make an aircraft pitch nose high and become difficult or impossible to recover from a stall during an early climb.
Ooh.
So technical explanations can risk sanitizing grief. Basically, these people died and they're trying to chalk it up just to some one minor inconvenience, which, I mean, it was one issue, but still. So when the names of the dead were published, Evansville learned that nearly its entire men's basketball program had been wiped out. The university canceled the remainder of the season. Mourners filled churches, candlelit vigils, and lit up campuses and neighborhoods for the fallen basketball team.
That's nice.
Coaches and staff elsewhere from other colleges and stuff offered condolences and support. Colleges across the country paused to acknowledge the loss. For a small school, this was not just the loss of the athletes, but the loss of the generation of young men woven into town's daily fabric. So, again, one basketball team member did not board that flight due to an injury, David Furr. He's a young freshman whose ankle injury kept him off the plane. He was still alive. David Furr and his younger brother, Byron, were killed in a two-car automobile accident in Newton, Illinois, just months after the plane crash.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So this is why I kind of compared it to Final Destination, because...
I get it now. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a movie.
Yes.
I think it's the fourth one where there's a bunch of people going on a plane and one lady has a Final Destination premonition where the plane crashes and so she doesn't get on the plane. And this is very similar. But he didn't have any premonitions. He just was fortunate enough to have an injury, so he couldn't play.
Yeah.
But you'd think still they'd bring the injured guy on the plane. I mean, it's not gonna...
I would, yeah. Even though they're not going to play, I think they typically... I would assume that they typically travel together. He's still a team member.
Yeah. Usually they... Maybe he had like a big final or something. Or
maybe... Or short on seats or something.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just a really weird, unfortunate event that led to the death of the whole team. But separately. Like.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Since it was so long ago, though, they were able to rebuild the program, and now the new basketball team is doing well.
That's good. That's good.
Very unfortunate thing that happened.
For sure. I don't have a problem flying most of the time. I've had a few weird experiences, but it definitely makes you think about all of the important things that need to go into a successful flight.
And you just trust two random people in the front of a plane didn't make those decisions correctly.
Right.
And whatever ground crew is helping with that too. But
correct.
Still, the pilots are ultimately the ones who are in charge.
They're responsible. Yes.
Hundreds of people's lives.
Right.
It's scary to think about when you actually do think about it, but can't.
It
really
is terrifying.
It.
Yeah.
Unless you want to go through the pain of getting your pilot's license, but I hear that's a long, long process.
Yeah, which is good. I don't need to buy an airplane for other people.
I found this Instagram account of a dude who's got a boat plane, which is different from the ones that land on the water with like the big
like
things on the side. This one, like the whole plane sits in the water like a boat once you land, and then you use like the the propellers to fly to like push yourself in the water. And then this dude, like, he's like, oh, I'm on a 3-hour journey today, but I found this little lake and I'm gonna land here, and looks like they have a fish shack, so I'm gonna go grab some lunch in my plane boat.
That's weird. I don't think I would like that.
It's, you can't combine those two things, because if there's a malfunction either in the sky or the water, that's not good. But
yeah, that's problematic.
Let's hear your story, Mom.
Okay. Are you ready? This is going back to 1999 with a story about Minnie Soriano. She was a smart 13-year-old girl living in the Bronx. She was a latchkey kid, meaning, it's funny because I never really thought about the latchkey kid term. And I was listening to a podcast recently. I don't even remember what it was. And they threw out the term latchkey kid and then explained what it was. And I went, oh, some people don't know what that means.
I feel like most people do.
I thought so too, but apparently maybe some people don't. I don't know. Basically, it meant that she would come home from school when nobody else was there, and she would be there alone until somebody else got there. But instead of letting herself into the house, she lived in an apartment complex. She would do her homework in the lobby of the building while waiting for family to come home and then let her into the apartment. So kind of a latchkey kid, but kind of not, because kind she not, was yeah. just, yeah.
In the, she was the term well known itself, in the, just being unsupervised after school until parents.
Correct. Home. Yes. So, in she the sense was. Of the term. Correct. She was well known in the building for selling candy to other residents as a way to make some spending cash for herself. She was an ambitious straight-A student who dreamed of someday becoming an astronaut. On February 24th, 1999, she left school like any other day, but on this day, she never returned home. Unfortunately, her body was found 4 days later. She was wrapped in a trash bag and found inside of a store's dumpster about 2 miles from her home. Her autopsy. Oh, are you waving at me?
I tried to unmute myself, but I clicked the little hands up icon.
And then you waved at me, and I was like, apparently, weird. Declan's got to say
something to say. Oopsies.
Minnie's autopsy showed that she had been sexually assaulted and then strangled. Forensic evidence was preserved from the body and her clothes. Police began investigating and questioned her neighbors and people from the neighborhood, but there were no leads and the case eventually went cold. Even though there were no active leads, Minnie's case was still making appearances in the media. Her family and friends were remembering what an amazing young girl she was, and everyone was hoping for a break in the case. That break came 20 years later in the form of familial DNA. Familial DNA searching works differently from traditional DNA matching. Instead of requiring an exact match to a known offender's profile, the technique looks for partial genetic matches that are similar enough to suggest a close biological relative. If the system returns a partial match, investigators can then trace the family, identify potential suspects, and try to obtain a DNA sample directly from that suspect. Usually done behind their back, taking their trash. We've discussed a couple of cases where this type of DNA was used to solve cold cases, and the use of it is getting more popular, although it is being, it's been occurring more frequently. It definitely has people that are opposed to it. Some people believe it is an invasion of privacy and shouldn't be allowed to be used in cases like these. Although, if we didn't use them, a lot of cases wouldn't be solved today. Regardless of this argument, the technique is still being used, and it was the linchpin in this case. In 2019, detectives submitted the preserved DNA profile. The sample came from a semen stain on Minnie's sweatshirt. The search returned a partial match to a man who was deceased. He was the father of Joseph Martinez. From there, investigators mapped the family tree and identified Martinez, Joseph Martinez, as a likely candidate. With a new lead, detectives began surveillance. They followed Martinez, watched his patterns, and eventually collected a discarded straw from a diner that he had visited. Just like I said, they're taking the trash stuff.
I feel like once it's in the garbage, it'd be really hard to distinguish whose straw belonged to whose cup. But maybe that's just me.
Well, but maybe he threw, I didn't look at the details to see like if he walked away from a table and left his cup there with a straw, or I don't know. Either way, they got a discarded straw, and they did get a personal sample from him to match it. So it's not like they just based the whole case on this discarded straw out of the trash. They actually took a full sample from him and it had matched.
Okay.
It matched the sample taken from Minnie's sweatshirt. That positive match was enough for authorities to move forward. On November 29th, 2021, 22 years after Minnie's murder, Martinez was arrested and charged with 2 counts of second-degree murder. But who was this guy, and how had he come across Minnie? Martinez was not unknown in his community. He was actually quite well-known. He, for years, had walked the Bronx and parts of New Rochelle with a telescope, offering free astronomy lessons to children and adults alike. He was commonly referred to as Jupiter Joe.
Ooh, this would get me.
Yeah.
Jupiter Joe would trick me into looking at his telescope.
And if you were interested in someday being an astronaut. Yeah.
I feel like everyone, if you get the opportunity to look in a telescope, you're going to look at it, right?
Yeah.
Like if you go for to sure. like a beach property, or like a little beach house for vacation, 9 times out right. of 10, they have a little, whether it's a toy telescope or not, but they got a telescope right. there. Everyone,
you're
going
to look in it. Right.
Yeah. It's just human instinct. I want to see.
For sure.
I can't see.
He would set up on sidewalks or subway platforms, inviting passersby to peer through his telescope and point out planets or constellations. To many, he was a harmless and informal educator. He was polite, unassuming, and many remembered him fondly. As it turned out, Martinez lived in the same building as Minnie back in 1999. He was interviewed at the time of Minnie's murder and remembered seeing her in the building lobby and selling candy door to door. But without a suspect DNA match, he wasn't considered a suspect at all.
Now, so he decades was doing later, the Jupiter Joe thing when she went missing? That wasn't yes. like just a later? Okay.
No, he was doing it, and he lived in her building.
Okay.
Decades later, that familiar neighborhood face became the focus of an investigation that was sealed with a discarded straw. After his arrest in 2021, Martinez was arraigned on charges of intentional murder in the course of sexual abuse and felony murder. The case went to trial in 2025. Although he pleaded not guilty and maintained his innocence, prosecutors laid out the forensic trail firmly. The preserved 1999 DNA evidence, the familial DNA partial match, the surveillance, and the collected straw sample that eventually led to the full DNA match. Defense attorneys attempted to challenge the evidence. They raised questions about possible contamination or innocent transfer, given the many residents in the building and the building's shared spaces. But the DNA match from Martinez's straw to the sample from Minnie's sweatshirt proved persuasive to the jury. You look like you have a question.
I understand that, yes, if you live in the same building, there's a chance you could somehow get your DNA on there, but not sperm. Right, that's the DNA.
Correct.
That you got from, you're not just going around sperming on people.
He's just leaving his sample anywhere possible.
Likely story, yeah. But even if he didn't murder her, you should still go to jail for coming on a kid.
Being a creepo. Yeah. In November 2025, so just a few weeks ago, the jury returned a guilty verdict on two counts of second-degree murder. And he is currently awaiting sentencing. A couple weeks ago.
Damn.
This is a recent case of conviction. He has not been sentenced yet. It's supposed to be early 2026 that he gets sentenced.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And that is my story. And it's what's really interesting to me is that this was the first case where familial DNA was used in New York. I would have thought that there would have been other cases, but because that's been around for, 10 years? That it's been really changing things? But it's the first one.
There's probably a lot of cross-contamination in New York, though. I mean,
maybe. I don't know.
You take a swab of something and they're going to come up with four different DNA samples on it.
Could be. Do you have a chaser for us? I said it first.
So
this is my chaser. My chaser is, I found this article on Good News Network and they were talking about how researchers have found a link between owning a dog and better mental health, especially in teenagers. They found that teenagers
have... You need to do a study about that, but go on.
correct. But they did find that it seems to be related to the microbes and the microbiome of dog owners. So, like, all the
Frito smells good for you.
The bacteria that lives inside of us, they have found certain microbial things that are linked to increased social behavior and empathy, and that people with dogs have those microbes, and it makes them more social and have more empathy and be nicer and happier.
So that just means you're eating your dog's hair and spit and other dandruff and shit like that. So you're consuming your dog's dander and whatever the fuck, and
if you live with anything, person, four-legged thing, you are exposing yourself to
ingesting
the microbes.
Some aspect of it.
No way you couldn't.
So that makes me curious if cat owners are opposite, because I'm not very social and I have a cat. So I wonder if my cat's non-social, because I have a very non-social cat. My cat loves me, but no one else.
I think you've always been that way. I don't think you can blame it on Lulu. Well,
we've always had a cat, though. For as long as I can.
Yes,
remember,
but our cats haven't been antisocial like Lulu is.
Okay, true. But
boss,
she likes to gaslight me about stupid things like couches and women's restrooms and stuff like that.
Oh, and they do exist, I'm telling you.
I
I still think this is all a big trick on men.
But. Okay. I will take a picture. The next time I'm in a bathroom that has one, I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Yeah, ChatGPT made it.
I'll do a video of walking into the bathroom showing you the couch and everything. I might get arrested if I do that. For being a weirdo.
Gaslighting thing for me is saying that my cat is a figment of my imagination and she doesn't actually exist because no one else has seen her. And it's
I've got a good seen
point.
Her.
She's got a good point.
I have seen her. She doesn't like that I've seen her, but I have seen her
Didn't
with my
sniff
own
you on
two
the
eyes.
Nose one time while you were sleeping, and when you woke up, she ran away.
No, she sniffed my finger one time when I came over. When you lived in the studio in Eugene, she was sniffing me when I had to spend the night on the floor there.
There's nowhere for her to hide, though, in that fucking place.
There was not. She was checking me out. So I have seen her physically with my own eyes.
I'll bet she'll come out during Christmas if Dad can sit still for long enough. She'll usually
good luck with that.
Peek her head out. But anyways, my chaser is an audio drama that is very similar to a show that we've both been watching recently called From.
Oh, yes.
So the idea of From is you enter this town that you can't escape from. The road just leads back to the entrance to the town. And there's these monsters there that come out at nighttime and terrorize the town, basically, without revealing too much information. But
yes,
they're like a mix between zombies and vampires.
Yes,
basically. But this audio drama that I found called Blood Rock Springs, it's a new audio drama. So it hasn't, they still release it. I think they release episodes every other week.
Okay.
But they're only 20 minutes long, so it makes me mad that I have to wait so long. But anyways, this small town in Australia gets surrounded by a dust cloud that you can't exit from. So they're trapped in this little small town. And when you go into the dust cloud, it turns you into basically a zombie that's growing shit out of its head and Yeah, it's super interesting.
Like
it reminds me a lot of From, but I just wish they released episodes quicker because I want to binge it. But it's really good. Really interesting listen if you like horror slash comedy, sci-fi type stuff.
I'll have to check it out. I'll wait until it's done, though. Yeah.
This seems like it's going to be a multiple season thing, but I'll let you know when your season's done.
Okay, sounds good.
Because with Tower 4, we did that for a chaser a long time ago. But they release episodes quarterly now. And the episodes are so good. And they always end on cliffhangers. And it drives me nutty.
Yeah. I need to binge it.
Audio shows.
Don't make me wait.
It's so good.
Mostly, here's my problem with ones that come out like that. I'm going to forget to go back and listen to the next episode. If you're not coming out every week, I'm going to forget that I was listening to it at all for 6 months or longer. Well,
the nice part about Tower 4, though, is they make you wait a long time, but the episodes are an hour and a half almost. So at least you get what you're waiting for. But with this new one, it's 20 minutes, and they do the thing where Spotify started doing you pay money and you get extra content. So I'll see that they posted an episode. It's basically Patreon, but on Spotify. But it'll pop up on my new feed because I always go in the new every day when I'm looking for a podcast.
Right.
And I see, Blood Rock Falls. And then it's just an extra that you have to pay money to listen to. And I'm like, fuckers.
I don't like that. I don't like it.
I'd like to support you, but I can't support every fucking podcast I listen to.
Right. We'd be broke.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for telling that sad story. Hopefully we can come back after he's been convicted or something, or set free.
Yeah. Yeah. Until proven he's guilty, not going to be set free. He's convicted on two counts. He's not getting out anytime soon.
Yeah. All right. Love you, Mom.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.